things that you can do with a predator call to get animals to come in is very enticing to me.
Back at me broadside, I got a shot off.
Fawn hooves and that stuff. I found teeth. I found all sorts of stuff.
I love how the two hikers there, they beetled right out of there when they found bears were in there. It's great.
Like in British Columbia, Washington State doesn't allow baiting and it doesn't allow hunting with dogs.
So hunting something that's hunting you is just it's a whole different dynamic.
That's where the ultimate guide to black bear hunting came in.
That it scared the living shit out of me when I seen him.
I didn't follow my own advice.
Couldn't find any blood, clear miss.
Two bear had come in. Without another shooter there, without another person, I would have never known. I like hunting things that can hunt you if they so choose.
Alright everybody, got a great episode lined up for you here. Today I'm joined by Doug Bowes, the bear calling master. Doug shares some stories and gives us a bunch of tips and tricks that he's learned and used over the years, making him, in my opinion, one of the most successful bear hunters out there. There's going to be a lot of good information you guys are going to take away from this episode, so hope you enjoy it. Okay, Topomaps Plus is one of the world's leading backcountry navigation apps, turning your phone into a fully functional GPS unit. Backroads Maps Books is proud to offer maps as an in-app purchase for Topo Maps. This makes it super easy to download mobile apps for offline use. This way you can get accurate and reliable GPS tracking and navigation well out of cell and data service. With Topo Maps Plus, you can view your location on the map, add waypoints, trace new routes, measure distance and elevation, change and share your tracks with your friends, you know, once you're back in service. Never get lost with Backroads Maps. One thing I love about your book, the No Bait, Just Bears, is the stories you have in there. And I like how you tell the stories and then you break down what you did wrong and kind of, you know, what you learned. So maybe before we get started on telling the people who you are, Doug, you can maybe just set the mood for us with one of those bear hunting stories.
Yeah, my older brother, David, he kind of got me into bear hunting, actually. And anyway, it's in the winter. It's like the last weekend of season, I believe. So, and it's up in the mountains, so there's snow on the ground. And it's kind of an odd time to bear hunt, but still a fun time. So we hike in. We get there in the morning. We hike in. And we're kind of overlooking this gully. And it's got some, you know, on the far side, it's got some little patches of trees and avalanche chutes and stuff like that. And so it looks like a good spot to kind of call. It's got a creek down below and some cover and whatnot. And then behind us is kind of steep. And then there's a tree line kind of behind us, probably 150 yards up a hill or so. So I sit down and I start calling, real cool, crisp morning. And I'm calling away on I believe it was like a rabbit distress. And the snow's probably a foot and a half deep or so. And then up behind me, about 150, 200 yards behind me, it goes kind of steep and there's a tree line, thick trees behind us. So anyway, I'm calling away and I was expecting to see a coyote kind of pop out because it's just that type of morning, real cool, crisp, quiet. And it just looked like a coyote was going to come out. But anyway, I was calling away and I want to say, about 15 to 20 minutes into it, I could be wrong. It might've been a half an hour, but I want to say about 15, 20 minutes. I was getting cold. So I stopped and I stood up and kind of stretched a little bit. Then I decided to sit back down and start calling again. And I want to say I started calling again for a little bit more. And then I heard a shot. And then my brother, he was just kind of down to my right and out of my view a little bit. And so that's kind of a key point. You want to make sure where your hunting partner is. But anyway, he was down to my right. I heard a shot and I says, hey, did you get something? Was it a coyote? And he says, no, it was a bear. Stay put. And so I stay put. And then he gave me the okay that the bear was down. And so what had happened was, is when I was calling, that first time I stopped calling, David, my brother, he was getting cold too. And he stood up because he figured I was done. And he turned around and he saw a bear that had crept up behind me in the brush. And the bear was only, I don't know, 15, 20 yards kind of around the corner from where I was. But when I stood up to get warm, that bear noticed me and then started, actually noticed David. That's right. It noticed David's movement, I think, from him standing up too, and then started going up the hill and disappeared before David could get a shot off at the bear. And then when I started calling again, a different bear came out of the woods from behind us again, and then came down this draw, and that's where David had shot. But the point of the story is as I was calling and stuff like that, I had no idea that two bear had come in. Without another shooter there, without another person, I would have never known that I had called in two bears. I just would have thought that I had completely screwed up on the set. And in reality, two bears came in. One was super close to me, and then the other one was, I don't know, like 70 yards up a hill, I think. And that was a lot of fun once we got up there and you know, shooting a black bear in thick snow like that, and it was just a pretty morning. And we gutted it and drug it down to the trail. And the trail is kind of a popular hiking trail, and it was almost like a luge. It was kind of icy and kind of dug out almost like a ditch. And David drug that thing out, and it just slid basically all the way to the car. And on the way out, we ran into a couple of hikers, and they couldn't believe that there was bear up there. And one set of hikers actually turned around and left, not in disgust from us, but in fear of seeing another bear. And then the other hikers were just kind of amazed. They're like, wow, we can't believe there's bear up here. And we're, you know, what do you think? What do you think? Where do you think bears live? And so, yeah, in that story, the valley across that I was looking at with those little tree areas, I think I called those like little bear apartments, because you could see where bear tracks went into those little bundles of trees. And I think there was actually dens in there. And that was a couple of them. And that was my idea, was trying to call those bear out of those wintering dens. But in reality, two of them came from behind us. So that's that story.
I love that one. I love how the two hikers there, they beetled right out of there when they found bears were in there. It's great.
Yeah, they're completely surprised.
Yeah, you got a lot of good stories in that in your book. And like I said, it's nice how you tell the story and then you kind of break it down, you know, what you learn from that and all that stuff. And that's in the one of your books, No Bait, Just Bears. And you also have another book, The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting. I haven't been able to get my hands on that book yet. It's just not available right now on Amazon. So hopefully when they must be short on prints or something, but once it comes available, I got it. So I'm going to be notified. So I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, maybe Doug, before we get too deep here, you can just start off by telling all the listeners, you know, who you are and kind of what inspired you to write these two great books.
Yeah, no problem. So obviously my name is Douglas Bowes. I live down in Washington State. The first book that you're referring to, No Bait, Just Bears, that was just kind of a self-published project that I wanted to do. Like in British Columbia, Washington State doesn't allow baiting and it doesn't allow hunting with dogs. And I saw online that there was a lot of questions about how to hunt bear without using those two options. And so I just decided, as a bear hunter, I was like, well, I'll just kind of combine my stories and my knowledge and put this out there through a self-printing publishing company and distribute it and see if it takes. And so that's kind of what I did. And then with that, once I did that, I shopped it around to different publishers. I just sent out copies to different publishers just to try to generate interest and see what happens. I always tell people, you know, it's writing or whatever. It's very similar to fishing. You know, you just keep casting out until something bites. And I happened to send that to my publisher in New York. They liked the book, but they said, you know, obviously we can't publish this. But if you would like to rewrite it, we can add a lot more to it. And then we can push out, you know, a high quality book. And so that's where The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting came in. That's kind of why I wrote those two books. The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting does contain tips on baiting, and it has different bear recipes in there and step-by-step on how to skin bears and more calling stories and things like that. And one thing I want to point out really quick, you're looking for Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting Online, actually, it was in its third reprinting, and I think what is available now is all that's available. So if you are interested in it, I know that Amazon doesn't carry the physical copy anymore because they sold out. There is the ebook version that's available, or you can Google online, and I think like Books a Million or Barnes and Noble, they still kind of carry it, and it's available in like Cabela's stores and stuff like that physically. But I think, to my knowledge, what's out there is what's out there. So and the other thing is, if you want to get one of those two books, get The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting. The No Bait, Just Bears was that self-published book, but it contains a lot of the same information. I would say that The Ultimate Guide is just, it's expanded, more refined, and it's just a better value for your money. So I'm not trying to short myself of funds here. I'm just saying, hey, go with The Ultimate Guide if you're going to buy one.
Yeah, well, I started with No Bait, Just Bears, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm definitely looking forward to the next one, and that's a good tip. I'll as we get off the line here, I got to make sure I get my hands on one of those. It'll be a collector's item one day.
Yeah, I actually had to go. I went down to the Cabela's like a month ago and bought myself a copy because I've either given them away or, donated them to charity or something to that effect. And I didn't have a physical copy of my own, so I went down and bought one. So,
yeah, definitely need one of those. So, Doug, up here in British Columbia, we're almost halfway through our spring black bear season. And you mentioned that Washington has similar regulations on black bears as BC. Up here, we're allowed two bears. We can't use bait. We're not allowed electronic calls up here. And I think in your state, it's all pretty much similar, isn't it? And except for spring bear, if I'm not wrong, that's on draw only, isn't it?
Yeah, spring bear is over-the-counter draw only, unless I think some of the tribes run a guide service to where you can hunt over bait, I think, with them. But that's a whole separate, that's the Indian tribe situation. But general public, yes, it's special draw only. We can get two bear a year here, but we can use electronic calls here.
So oh, is
that's
that right?
Legal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you get a draw this year for spring bear?
No, I put in for it, and I have I think I have the most points I've ever had for it. I think I'm at 5 or 6 points. I usually draw about every 4 years. So no luck for me. My nephew, he got drawn, and he's in the process of trying to find a bear right now. So good luck to him. But he's the only one in the family who got drawn.
Oh, and he's not knocking down the door of his old Uncle Doug to take him bear hunting?
Yeah, I'd be happy to take him out, but I know his dad, his dad works 40 hour a week, like most of us or more. And I know his dad wants to take him out and show him the ropes. So hopefully that pans out. I'm pulling for him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool for sure. Yeah. So what do you prefer, spring or fall bear hunting?
Either, I like, they're kind of different and they both have positives and kind of negatives, but well, not too many negatives, different positives. Let's put it that way. So with spring bear over here, since it's a draw, it's not as crowded per se. You have like large areas all to yourself. You can drive behind locked gates that you normally would have to hike in or pedal bike or something to that effect. And the strategy is a little bit different, because bear in the spring, they're eating that green grass, they're stripping trees. The rut's going on if you hit it later in the season. So that's a whole different dynamic. Whereas in the fall, it's general season, so there's more people out bear hunting, although there's not a ton of pressure for bear because, there's some pressure, but not a lot. And the bear are eating blackberries, and it's just a different time of year. So it's nice in the spring to go blow the stink off, but it's nice in the fall to go out and get ready for deer and elk season. So I love them both, really. But spring is special because it's a draw.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love spring bear hunting. It's nice too. It breaks up the long daunting winter.
Yeah, after being cooped up, I think everyone's itching to get out, and if you can get out spring bear hunting, that's fantastic. And the hides are great if you can get them early that time of year before they start rubbing them off, because they just come right out of the den, and they got that nice winter hide going on. So
yeah, nice thick coat. So what started your obsession with bear hunting?
I guess I kind of got into it with my brother, David. He kind of got into it just on his own. And then I started palling around with him and hunting them outside of a town called Issaquah, kind of up in the hills, and then, you know, life gets in the way and we can't hunt together as often as we should. And so I just kind of started exploring it on my own. And I really enjoy predator hunting. I like hunting things that can hunt you if they so choose. It's just a different kind of dynamic compared to deer or elk. You know, deer or elk, they're most of the time they're prey animals, and so their, you know, instinct is to take off running. Well, bear are curious. They might come in, they might sneak behind you, like I told about the story. You know, they could charge you. It's just a whole different ball of wax. And you know, bear are kind of mysterious. I never really saw a whole lot of bear until I started hunting them. So, you know, I would deer hunt since I was 12, and I don't think I saw my first bear until I was early mid 20s when I started hunting them. And I think a lot of that has to do with the time I was out in the woods. Most of the time I was out in the woods for deer hunting was in the fall when the bear are, you know, they're following the what remains of the blackberries and stuff, but that's kind of a late season to find bear. And so, yeah, that kind of got me into it, I guess. It's just the idea of hunting predators. And Randy Anderson of Calling Out Coyotes, he is the guy who kind of got me into predator calling. And so, you know, I got into predator calling bobcats and coyotes, and then it kind of morphed into, well, let's try this for bears. And I saw a DVD by Wayne Carlton called They Come to Eat, and that's all about predator calling bears and stuff. And that's a great DVD if you can pick it up or watch it on YouTube. And that really got me hooked, because that guy just got him right in close, and he had like cougar on there that were coming in, and it was just, it's incredible. The things that you can do with a predator call to get animals to come in is very enticing to me.
It's pretty cool. I do a bit of calling. You know, I'm nowhere near as good of a caller as you, but you know, it's like you said, it's something about hunting something that's hunting you. It's a whole different dynamic, that's for sure. You've been, you got two great books. You've been on numerous podcasts, hunting podcasts. You know, I really wanted to get into some of the specifics, if you're willing to share that with us, just about, you know, scouting and weather, you know, kind of everything that, you know, maybe a new hunter getting into bear hunting looking for. But seeing as it's spring, I was kind of hoping you could kind of just walk us through some tips for spring bear hunting, you know, kind of when do you start your scouting, what you're looking for, you know, what areas you're trying to focus on, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll play it as you were lucky and you got a draw tag.
Sure. So, I mean, if I got a draw tag, I'm putting in for units I already know and I've already kind of scouted, but let's say I didn't. The first thing, what I always tell people is if you find food for that time of year that the bear are eating with minimal human interaction, you're going to find bears. So find food, find bears. And so you got to ask yourself, what are bears eating in the spring? At the very beginning, they are eating what comes up first out of the ground, and that's green grass shoots. So you want to find like sunny areas that have those shoots coming up first. And then after that, I'll look for like skunk cabbage swamps, because that's another food source that they'll munch on and dig up and eat. And then as spring kind of warms up just a little bit, that's when they start stripping those trees. So you want to look for like Douglas fir, those type of trees that are, if you take your hands and you make a C out of both of your hands and you put them together, that's about how round, and maybe a little bit rounder, you can extend that out a couple inches, but that's about how round of the trees that you want to look for. So they're probably, you know, like 10-year-old trees, not super old, but the bears will strip that bark off and they'll peel that bark off to get to the cambium layer. And what they're getting at is kind of a sugary sap that comes up out of the roots that's stored in the roots in the winter. And then as it heats up the environment, that sap comes up those trees, and that's what they start to chew on. And so as far as scouting goes, even if I'm just driving around or whatever, and I'm looking at hillsides and I start to see like dead, like red trees or yellow trees, so when they're red, they've been dead for, you know, a year or two. When they're yellow, they're dying or on their way completely out. But that's kind of a key to me, if those are the right size trees, and you can kind of spot them along the hillside that, hey, there was spring damage there the year before or the year before that. And so that's kind of a clue to like, hey, I should probably check out this area if I'm going to be hunting bear spring bear in that area particularly, because they were there a year or two ago. And the environment probably hasn't changed a whole lot from those 2 years or 3 years. And so that's definitely a key feature that I look for when I'm looking for spring bear.
Do you find that bears will stay in an area for a significant length of time?
So, like, it depends what they're doing. So in, if they have a large area of acres where those trees are the right size and the sap's coming in, they'll stay in that patch for a while unless they get pushed out either by another bear or hunter interaction. But when they're stripping those trees, you know, they'll stay on a tree for a half hour, more or less, could be more, could be less. And sometimes you'll see just a little chunk taken out of a tree where they strip part of it and they chewed it and it wasn't quite ready. So then they move on. So when they're in that patch, they're kind of bouncing around a lot, constantly moving. But if they find like a big green patch, they're still moving, they're eating that grass, but they'll just kind of stay there, that I've found, until better food sources have been found or something pushes them out. They're pretty active in the spring as far as moving around, finding those green patches and finding those trees. Where they really kind of stay stationary to me is in the fall when the blackberries and the blueberries are dying out, but there's still big patches of it. You know, they'll stay in those areas eating until the food source is gone, or they get pushed out. But you can really focus in the fall on the remaining food sources that are left, and that kind of congregates bears in those specific areas. And then, you know, in the spring, as the rut comes along, late May, June, the boars, they start traveling quite a bit because they're just looking for the sows that are in heat. And so, the boars are moving quite a bit during that time.
Yeah, you talk about in your book, too, about bear damage. And, when I was reading your book, a couple of things happened. A light went off in my head, and at the same time, I kind of felt a little bit stupid. I spent a lot of time in the backcountry, and this is one thing I've never bothered to look for as an indicator of bears in the area. I don't, when you're out looking for elk or deer, yeah, you're looking for rubs and that, but it just never dawned on me to look for those bear scrapes. It was real cool and interesting to read about it in your book.
Yeah, how I learned about that was I got drawn for spring bear one year, my first year, and the logging company and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, they have kind of a very short class of, hey, here's your keys to the lock gates, and these are the areas that we're finding damage in, and this is kind of what to look for. So they actually keyed me in on, hey, this is what they're doing to the trees. This is kind of what it looks like. And then since they gave me that little nugget, when I start walking around looking for that, boy, you can certainly find a lot of areas that have been damaged by bear once you know what to kind of look for. Like I say, you don't notice it when you're out and about, but then once you know what to look for, you certainly find a lot of it.
Yeah, like I said, after reading that, I kind of just, a light went off in my head, and it's definitely something that I'll be looking at now on. I think the weather down in Washington is very similar to BC here. So right now, for some folks wanting to head out for bear right now, what should they be looking for in terms of topography? Like what sort of things should they be, or areas they should be trying to focus on, and maybe what time of the day they should be concentrating their efforts, that sort of thing?
I like evenings and mornings for bear. It's just kind of cooler. You know, bear are still warm in those coats. So me personally, I like to hunt the evenings and the mornings, but you can find bear kind of all day. It depends on the hunter. But that's what I concentrate on. As far as topography goes, I like to find like cool creek areas, brushy draws. But particularly this time of year, again, you want to find what food source they're going for. So if you have, a brushy draw, but it has mature stands of trees and no food in it, that's not necessarily something you want to look for. But if you find a brushy draw that has a 5 to 10 year old reprod growing in it, that might be something you're going to key in on, because they have a water source, they have cover, and then they can start stripping those trees. Or if there's a swamp nearby where the sun can get down and really start growing some grass. Now it's a little late for that because everything is pretty much greened up now. But still, that's an area I would keep an eye on for the skunk cabbage, for areas that have insect activity, ants, termites, that type of thing, where they can dig into stumps. But really, I tell people to watch draws, watch travel corridors, but find that food. The food is key. You want to find what they're eating, and that will definitely help you narrow down the areas that you want to hunt.
You know, I think most people listening will know that bears are omnivores. They eat, you know, all sorts of vegetation and meat. How long do bears concentrate on those grassy areas and berries? And when do they kind of move on to more bigger, more protein meals?
I'd say the grassy areas are the first couple of weeks of spring, first couple of weeks of season, as things kind of grow up. And then, you know, skunk cabbage kind of comes in right behind it. As things warm up, the cambium layer, that sap comes up through the roots. And then by then, you know, you're starting to get some insect activity. So you can keep an eye on looking for torn up stumps. And shortly after that, you got fawns dropping and calves dropping. And so then you can work on predator calling, because that's now a new food source for them and something that they're not going to ignore. Usually it's about the end of season by then for spring. And then the next season for us would be fall, and that would be when the berries start to show up, because our fall season starts in August. And
oh,
by
right?
then berries are, really? Yeah, berries are August 1st. So some berries have started to come in, but yeah, you kind of got to follow where that food source is in different elevations, you know. Higher areas will probably still be covered in snow and not have as much food as down low, where it's getting greener and kind of warmer. So pay attention to that. You know, and if you find a nice grassy area or a area where it holds those trees and you're not seeing stripped areas or sign, you know, just keep walking, keep looking for that special sign, you know, bear crap sitting in the woods. It almost looks like horse manure, honestly. This, especially in the early spring with all that grass that they're eating. So don't mistake it for horse manure. If you come across a big pile of grassy looking scat in the middle of a grassy field, pay close attention to that. I'll often take a stick and dig through it. I've found fawn hooves in that stuff. I found teeth. I found all sorts of stuff that the animals have, bear have eaten, you know, and passed through. So
that's one thing I've definitely focused my attention on is bear scat. You know, it can tell you a lot of, you know, bear size, what it's been eating, just, you know, by looking at it. If it's, you know, if it's still full of really grassy stuff, then you know that what they've been feeding on. And also it's good because depending on you, you kind of get an idea of how fresh it is and, you know, when it's been in the area, that sort of thing. So
and keep in mind, like if you're hunting in the spring and you find like an old, like, you know, like a month old pile of bear scat from that spring, and you get disappointed, don't be too disappointed, because you know that there was bear activity in that a couple of weeks before you were there. And so the following season, you might want to hit that area just a little bit earlier. And the same could be said when you find scat in the fall or something like that. So in my book, I give an example of I'm out deer hunting and I come upon this log landing and there's like 35, 40 piles of bear scat, but it's all like 2 weeks old. So, you know, it's past when there's a bear in there, but it all has rose hip scat in it. He was eating the rose hips that were in this little brushy draw. But that keyed me in on, hey, you know, I can come here a couple weeks before deer season, and while bear season is still in effect, and probably tag out on a bear, because this is obviously an area that's frequented by bear because of the food. So, you know, I often take little notes, or mental notes at least, of areas that have older bear scat in it, and I just try to time it more correctly as to when the food's there and when the bear will be there.
Yeah, you know, that's funny, because you know, I heard you and Cody Rich talking about that, a hunting journal, and you know, that's one thing I've heard other guys talk about too, is keeping a hunting journal. And you know, last year, it's funny, I was like, it's one thing I'm gonna do this year. I'm gonna, you know, just put a waterproof little notepad in my backpack and just keep notes. And you know, I did it maybe once or twice, and then it's just funny. I don't know what happened. I just forgot about it. Yeah, it's funny you brought that up. That's definitely one thing I'm going to work on. But you guys were talking about it, and you keep a little journal as well. So you taking notes on weather and also logging, kind of just basically everything that you're seeing out there?
Anything that's of interest. And so, in the digital age too, you don't need to bring a waterproof anything. If you have your cell phone on you and you have, you can make little notes in your notepad on your cell phone, or if you have the Onyx app, you can use little pins and be like, hey, April 25th, old bear scat, 2 week old. So there's little pins, little indicators on your map that you could highlight. But
Oh, yeah.
so, I'm taking timing notes of, there's old bear scat in this area. I'm 2 weeks behind, so that's one issue. I'll mark strip trees. I'll mark scenting trees where a bear will stand up on like an old, or not an old, but like a young alder or something like that, and they'll rub all over the tree, or they'll grab the top of the tree and bend it over their shoulder. That's them kind of marking their territory. Letting people know, letting other bears know kind of the areas that they're working. And so I'll mark those because those are a little bit less obvious. But they're still a telltale sign that there's bear in the area. And I always kind of check those breaks to see what color of hair, if there's hair on the break, what color of hair it is. Maybe it's a color phase bear or a black bear. I'll mark new in areas that I'm hunting frequently for bear. If there's a fresh log cut like this year, I might mark that it's been cut, and so I'll avoid that area for the next, probably 2, 3 years until it starts growing up more brush, and then I'll go back and visit that area instead of driving out, to that specific gate and then hiking up. So yeah, just anything to help me shave time and energy and gas, that helps refine my search when I'm looking for bear.
Yeah, no doubt too. I also find as I get a little older, my memory seems to slip away for some reason. I don't know
Well,
why.
yeah, we just ran into that at the beginning of the episode. I couldn't even remember that story correctly half the time.
That happens, so I guess best of us. But you mentioned
Right.
Onyx up here. We don't have Onyx. We got a few other things. But so like Onyx, Google Earth, is that something you use a lot? Off season, you do a lot of e-scouting.
I do when I'm bored for sure. It's crazy what you can accomplish with e-scouting, and that's actually how I got my first spring bear was e-scouting. I found an area that I was seeing some good sign, bear scat. But when I walked into it was super thick. I couldn't really see more than like 10 yards in front of me from blackberry bushes and just, trees and stuff. And I thought, well, I'll take a look at this on, later on online. And so when I went home, I looked at Google Earth and I could see the area, and there was brush throughout, but there was little teeny pockets of open areas, 10, 20 yards long. And one section really interested me, and that was about a 100-yard stretch that was fairly open. And I thought, well, that's, not too far. I can get to that, and then I can hunt that area. And so that's actually right where I ended up shooting the bear. What had happened was, is a bear, bears throughout the years had stripped a bunch of those trees in that area, and so it left kind of a meadow surrounded by all this brush and grown up trees. So it left kind of a swampy open area meadow that was greened up with grass. And I just kind of hung out there until I saw a boar, and I ended up taking that one. So e-scouting can be helpful. And any other, e-scouting tools that you might have, you see you don't have Onyx, but any other, thing where you can mark, well, heck, even if you have a Garmin, if you have an old school Garmin, tracker, CB radio, you should be able to mark pins on that too,
Yeah,
provided you can use that. Yeah.
my GPS doesn't come out of my bag too often. I have one, but I mean, just with the technology, we've got Backroads Maps books up here, and we have iHunter, which is essentially the same thing as Onyx. So those are two great tools to use. But yeah, it's funny since with new technology, it's one thing. You seem to pull out less and less is those old school maps and your GPS.
Yeah, I've got a pile of old school maps that I gathered when I was first spring hunting, and I still hold on to them. I don't know if I'll ever use them again, but I still have them as almost like nostalgia, I guess.
I always keep one in my backpack. I mean, I like looking at, the big map. I'm not the best guy with technology, and I'm always still skeptical of battery running out or me dropping it or something like that. I always
Oh
keep
no,
one.
like it's you should always have the skills to use a map and a compass to to find your way out, because technology is definitely fallible. You know, you can drop your phone in a creek or smash it or who knows what.
So what about like camo and scent? Do you do do you focus a lot on scent control and camo?
You know, it depends what I'm doing. So like with scent control, my scent control consists of this. I'll hike into a spot and I'll sweat and I'll get stinky, and then I'll take some Douglas fir branches off and I'll strip the bark a little bit, and then I'll rub pitch all over my armpits. That's my scent control. Most of the time I'm looking for controlling my scent through the wind. So I just want to use the wind to try to benefit myself in the hunt. I think that bears can probably smell you quite well, even with scent control. So I don't bother with it too much. I do try to cover it a little bit with pitch. But that's about that. As far as camo goes, I've killed plenty of bear in blue jeans and a t-shirt. But when I'm predator calling, I bring along what I call a predator poncho. It's basically a camo thing of burlap that I've cut a hole in, and it looks like a poncho that I drape over my body, and it breaks up my outline. So when I'm walking, you don't really see the gap between my legs. And then when I sit down, it makes me almost look like a bush or a rock. I can put a hood up over myself if I want, that I have attached to it. And, if I'm using a knee collar, I can hide my hands underneath the poncho itself, so you don't see any movement there, which is really good for cats, because cats will pick up on any sort of movement whatsoever really fast. Or if I'm just using the mouth call, I'll just, you know, put the mouth call in my mouth and use the surroundings to try to blend myself in. And, you know, I won't fluctuate my hand a lot when I'm calling. I will a little bit now and again, but I won't, you know, do a whole bunch of movements with my hand, just to avoid being spotted, basically.
Yeah, so calling, that's your bread and butter of bear hunting, isn't it?
Well, if I get bored, like if I'm out hiking around or something I'm not finding what I want, or if I, you know, see a nice brushy area, instead of me tromping through there and spreading my scent everywhere and being noisy and this and that, I might hike in a little bit and find a nice tall stump or log pile or rocky outcrop and call into that and try to call the animals out to me instead of me going in after them. I just think that's a smart way of doing it. And that's kind of, I found success with it. So it seems to be working for me, but you know, other people have other ways, but that's what works for me. And so if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's my theory.
Yeah, definitely not. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your calling, just your techniques and your cadence, you know, when's a good time to start calling and how long to call for, that sort of thing.
I always say any time's a good time to start calling. But you know, people will be like, oh, you got to wait till the fawns drop, or you got to sound this certain way. Or, you know, if you're calling like this, it doesn't sound right. Don't listen to that. So you don't have to be a perfect caller or have sounds perfect. All you want to do is create interest, and bears are predators and they're going to be interested in certain sounds. And so you just got to find the sound that they're interested in long enough to get a shot off. So, you know, if I'm squalling like a rabbit, but I don't quite sound like a rabbit, I might sound like, something else. The bear doesn't necessarily care. He wants to come and check out that sound, what's hurt, what's making that sound. And so that's key. Don't get down on yourself thinking that you're not a good caller if nothing's coming in. Something might have came in behind you. Something. Lots of times bear will sneak in and you won't even see him or hear him. So just keep plugging away.
Yeah, I laugh. I laugh at that. One thing I found with bear calling is that I'm way better at calling bears that I had no idea were there than I am trying to call the bear that I can see for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I was calling this rocky gully when I was elk hunting. I wasn't having much luck with elk. I thought, heck with it, I'm going to predator call for a while. So I sat, predator called, and I didn't follow my own advice. I called for about an hour, and then I, instead of staying there and waiting to see if anything came in, I just was like, all right, I'm out of here. So then I started hiking out, and I get around the draw, and I get up to the road, and a bear was coming in. He crossed the road, and he was coming in down to the draw to come see where I was. And if I would have stayed there, I would have saw him. But by then, you know, the whole thing was foobarred. But that's an example of not following my own advice. Getting back to your question, as far as cadence goes, I usually like to start off slow. So build a scenario in your head. You know, I always try to tell people, does a coyote, have a fawn, and it's, you know, it's not quite dead, so the coyote's, you know, harassing it. Is the fawn just lost? Make up that scenario in your head and then go with it. So I'll start kind of quiet and sad and whimpering. And then throughout the hour, I will raise the intensity and the sound of the call until near the end when it, you know, it really peaks out, and I'll keep that for a while. And then once I'm done, I'll either wind down like I'm dying off and then just give up, or I'll just shut it off after it's, you know, I've had a frantic pace, and I'll just cut it off. Sometimes bears will wait until you are done with your calling to come and see what all the noise is. Sometimes they'll charge right in under like 5 minutes. That scenario is key in your head. Try to build that and stick with it. And, you know, if your rabbit call's not working, try a fawn distress. If all your friends are using a fawn distress, try something else. You know, the bears in the area, they might have been educated on that specific sound, or they might not be interested in it that time of year. You can even try something that doesn't even live in the area. You know, sometimes I'll use like a boar squealing sound, or I'll use, you know, a coyote yelp. You wouldn't think a bear would come into a yelp and coyote distress, but I've had bears just come barreling into that, wanting to kill that coyote, which is kind of crazy to me. But, and that's unconventional calling. That's an unconventional sound that you normally wouldn't use on a predator, but, you know, just try to make stuff up. Use sounds that other people aren't, to pique that interest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In your book, you mentioned cold calling. Maybe you can just touch on that. What's cold calling?
Cold calling is kind of opposite of what you're doing. So if you see a bear and you start calling, that's, you know, to me, that's not cold calling. That's, hey, I see a bear, I'm going to try to get it to me. Cold calling is when I'm hiking around and I see, you know, a real brushy area or something that looks bearish, and I think that there's a bear in there. I will plant myself down somewhere and predator call that area. And I might have never called it before. It's a brand new spot. So to me, that's cold calling. It's just giving it a shot. And that has worked. It doesn't work every time, but I mean, most of what I do is cold calling. Lots of times if I see a bear, like a bear my brother shot when we were on a goat hunt with my dad, we could see the bear eating blueberries, and I blew on, it was a ways away, mind you, but I predator called, and once it heard my call, it ran in circles for about 15, 20 seconds and then stopped and then just kept eating blueberries. Like it was funny to see, because he was content. He had food, so why leave? So anyway, my brother went down there and shot that. But cold calling is just trying new spots. You know, if you're a fisherman and you're a bass fisherman and you see a sunken log, you know, the odds are, as a bass fisherman, you know that there might be a bass under that log. It looks like it holds bass. And as a bear hunter, you start to find more and more areas. You're like, you know what? I bet you there's a bear hiding out in there. That looks bearish. So I'll call down in there so I don't have to walk and disturb the area. And I'll give it like an hour, like I say, and then I'll hang out for 15, 20 minutes. And if nothing shows up after that, I'll pack up and try a different spot.
So when you're calling for, say you're down there for an hour, how long are you actually calling? Are you sitting down there and blowing on that thing for a solid hour? Because you must have some incredible set of lungs on you.
So you don't have to call and call and call straight for an hour. But I like to call for like 3, 4, 5 minutes, fairly steady, you know, not constant, but you're going up and down, changing your pitch. You're making noise for about 3, 4, 5 minutes, pausing, listening for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then starting again. But you want to make noise for about that hour with a break here or there in between. And I tell people, predator calling bears is a lot like playing with a cat. So when you have a string and you're playing with a kitty, the kitty's all interested while you're moving the string, right? And then you stop moving that string and the cat's like, meh, kind of walks off. And you start moving that string again and then the cat comes back. Same thing with predator calling. When you're making noise, lots of times those bears, they'll start walking in. And as soon as you stop, and I've seen this, as soon as I've stopped, they've sat down or they kind of lose interest and they'll start doing something else. But then you start back up again, and then they come right back and they start walking in. So you got to think in your head, hey, if I think there's a bear on that hillside a quarter mile away and it's covered in thick brush and blowdowns and everything, I got to give that bear enough time while I'm calling to get to me. So I want to reel it in with that sound for probably about an hour. And sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. It's, you know, it's not rocket science. But yeah, give yourself breaks, and you will often hear the bear coming in long before you see it, especially in brushy areas. Now, don't just think that every, you know, brush that moves is a bear, obviously, but you can definitely hear them coming if they're comfortable or if they're aggressive. And sometimes you can't hear them coming whatsoever. They don't make a sound. And the other tip for this too, I mean, you can read about it in my book too, but I use squirrels as indicators of predators coming in, not just bears, but predators. So if I'm predator calling and it's, you know, it's nice and quiet and I'm predator calling and a squirrel starts going nuts 400 yards to my right, that's kind of an indicator like, okay, maybe it's just the squirrel being mad at me. But then, you know, as I keep calling throughout the set, another squirrel, you know, 300 yards, 200 yards, 100 yards, you can almost follow the progression of the animal coming in. And I've seen that done with coyotes because the squirrel will, you know, give a warning shout at the coyote or the bobcat or the bear coming in. So pay attention to squirrel noises. If the thing's chirping far away and as you progress, squirrel noises get closer and closer with different squirrels, to me, that's a tip that something's coming in. So very focus on that direction too, when something like that's happening.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And, it's surprising when bear hunting, how quiet bears are, you know, something so big and, you know, they look so clumsy and, or they just don't care where they're walking. And, but when they want to be, they sure can be quiet. It's amazing.
I've had a bear stand up in front of me at like 15 yards and he had me dead to rights. Like he was looking right at me and I didn't raise my gun or nothing. And then he got down on all fours and I was waiting for him to stand back up again. And he just like melted. I mean, he was in blackberry bushes, but not, I didn't see a leaf, nothing moved. Like I stood there for totally still for like 45 minutes before I walked forward and he just was gone. It was insane how they can do that. It's
yeah.
Crazy.
It's nuts. Last year I seen this beautiful blonde black bear. I seen him once. Recently, I fell in love with that guy. I wanted to get after him. So there was an area I found. It had a water source, and it was the only water source basically in an area nearby. So I had some trail cameras up, and I caught him on a few trail cameras. One thing about trail cameras with bears, they definitely seem to eat those things, I noticed. But
they're interested. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, so I found this, you know, this one blonde stud. So one day I was still hunting, you know, just slowly make my way around this area, just seeing if get a glimpse of them, and you know, because there was some openings and stuff like that. So I'm walking up this hillside where there's a sort of an old path, and sure enough, he popped up. Had to be about 10, 15 yards to my right. He got up and he ran about another 10 yards. He stopped, looked back at me broadside. I got a shot off. Went up to where he was. When I shot, looked for some blood. I was there for about 2 hours, couldn't find any blood. You know, I just came to the conclusion I rushed my shot. It's a clear miss. So as I was walking back down, and I'm in, you know, waist high grass, not too tall, not really thick, but I was walking back down to where I had started, and this other bear jumps up not 5 yards from me. Now, he was either there the whole time and I never noticed him, or he snuck up on me somehow. But man, that just goes to show you how quiet those things are. It scared the living shit out of me when I seen him. I had my sling on my, you know, and I've had, you know, up in BC, we have a lot of grizzly bears and stuff. And, you know, I've had my run-ins with grizzly bears and all sorts of critters, but it doesn't matter what it is. It sure gets your heart going when there's something that has the potential to kill you, jumps up that close to you.
Yeah, definitely. I was predator calling one time and I had a bobcat almost jump in my lap. And that got my heart going. Cause I mean, it was brushy and I was calling on the other side of this like gravel road. And so the only clear space in front of me, directly in front of me, was just the patch of the road. And when that thing came out of the brush from directly across the road, all I saw was like a flash and then eyes. And I just swung my rifle and it stopped like basically right at the end of my rifle. And, you know, realized that wasn't a rabbit and then kind of got pissed off and then ran off. But I was just like, holy cow, that got my heart going.
Yeah, well, exactly, you know, and, you know, that's something that you're going to get cut up from it. I mean, you know what a house cat, what they're like, never mind something that's that size, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good note to, you know, to any new hunters out there listening that maybe are going out after bears for the first time. To, you know, if you can, take a friend with you, especially when you're tracking bears. But just to always be careful when you're tracking a bear that you shot at, or even bear hunting in general. You always got to be expect the unexpected.
Definitely, especially if you're calling, they'll sneak right up, or yeah, they come. I mean, yeah. They'll get within feet of you lots of times. You won't even know it if you're not careful.
You ever get too close to a bear and no scars from no bears or nothing like that?
Not yet. Knock on wood. I've been 3 steps from a bear that I talk about in the book. And then a couple of deer seasons ago, I was in my deer camp. I was backpacked in by myself, and right at dusk, it's just getting, you know, too dark to hunt, nothing like that. But I was camped right on this little open grassy spot surrounded by trees, and I was sitting down. I had my rifle next to me, and I was going to start cooking. I hadn't started cooking yet, and there was this, looked like a blob, or I couldn't tell if I was hearing things, if it was a wind or what. So then I kind of stood up, and I saw what looked like just a blob in the white grass, you know, kind of coming toward me. And I thought, man, am I seeing spots? And I kind of rubbed my eyes a little bit, and then I saw that blob stop, and then it moved again. I'm like, no, that's not a spot, and this, you know, this area is only 50 yards wide or something like that. And so I had my rifle kind of down by my feet, and I just kind of bent down and picked up my rifle, and that a bear walked basically right up to me and was only, I don't know, maybe 10 yards before I actually shot in the dirt between me and the bear, and it thing ran off. But yeah, just like walked right up to me. It was the craziest thing.
Yeah, they get, it's funny how big they get when they're right there. Do you guys have a lot of grizzlies down in Washington there?
We have grizzlies up in Okanagan County, and not a ton. You know, I think we're getting more, but it is a requirement now to take a bear identification test down here so you don't accidentally shoot a grizzly, that type of thing. So they are around, just not super prevalent, not like what you guys have going on, especially since the grizzly bear hunting got axed up there.
Yeah, it's funny, and lately there's many more incidences with grizzly attacks and cougar attacks, and then it's funny, you tell somebody about, oh, the cougar attack, and then you mention, well, there's no grizzly bear hunting anymore, and they're like, well, what does that have to do with a cougar? I'm like, well, a grizzly's king of the woods, and there's not a lot of predators around that sucker. If he's in an area, there's not too many things around that old boy, for sure. But they're actually going after, or they're trying to put a kibosh on black bear hunting in BC. And
of course they are. You know, it doesn't matter to them. You know, it's death by a thousand cuts. I've never heard an anti-gun person or a anti-hunter say, well, you know, if we just ban bear hunting, then, you know, we'll leave you alone for deer and elk and trapping and everything else. No, it's never good enough. They want a complete ban on all predators, all ungulates, that type of thing. It's disgusting. It angers me, but what do you do?
Yeah, well, exactly. And it is, you know, it's this phrase has been said a number of times, but it's the low-hanging fruit. Unfortunately, there's not a ton of bear hunters, and a lot of hunters just say, well, you know, whatever, I don't hunt bears anyway. But like you said, it's just death by a thousand cuts. After the bear, what's it going to be? It's going to, you know, it's just going to trickle down the line until there is something on your list that you do care about, but by then it'll be too late.
Right. It'll be, you know, it'll be rifle hunting for deer, because that's not fair for the deer. But then, you know, muzzle loader is the same thing, and all archery, you know, that wounds too many, so we got to get rid of that. That, you know, it's one thing after another with those people.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of them, and what we got to work on is the uneducated public. So, you know, I've talked to hikers and people who aren't necessarily anti-hunting but don't hunt, and they have, like, no idea that, A, you can eat bear, B, it's a requirement to take the meat, at least in Washington State, otherwise it's a felony for wanton waste. And so, you know, they think you just shoot it, take the hide and walk off, and that's not what happens. So I always encourage people to, you know, be a the ambassador and kind of showcase that, share summer sausage and breakfast sausage, you know, give people a taste of what bear meat actually tastes like and why we hunt and why we support that natural resource.
Yeah, and it's impressive how many people are surprised, you know, when food is cooked and prepared, or prepared and cooked properly, and then you give it to somebody and they're like, wow, that's awesome, what is it? And then you're like, well, that's blackburn. And they're like, wow, you know, it's just it's amazing their reaction if it's done properly. You know, Doug, I'm going to let you go here, but one quick thing I wanted to touch on before we part ways today is I imagine you must have a lot of rugs sitting around your house. So maybe if you could just give some tips or just talk a little bit about, you know, skinning, what you do once you have the bear down, you know, because one thing about bears is they've got such a thick, coarse hide, and, you know, it's a lot tougher than a deer. And it's a lot harder to get off than a deer. So how do you deal with your hide when you're making a rug?
Yeah, you know, spot on about it being tougher than deer. And, you know, the deer fat's kind of, it's almost dry-ish. You know, it's not a real greasy fat. Bear is definitely a greasy fat. You might as well put your hand in a cube of butter and then try to skin an animal with bear. You know, it's similar to deer if you're going to keep the hide, in that you want to keep it dry and cool and clean as best you can. And I go through step by step on how to skin a bear in The Ultimate Guide. But what you don't want to do is shoot a bear, throw it in the back of your truck, and then drive around for 4 hours, you know, showing your friends, because you might get hair loss. You just want to get that thing skinned out and cooled as quickly as possible. Don't dunk the hide in the creek or nothing like that. Just keep it dry. Water kind of helps bacteria grow, and bacteria is what causes that hair slippage. You know, if you can't skin the head out, or if it's going to be a little bit before you can get to a taxidermist, if provided you're going to take it to one, you want to get that bear frozen. Don't ball up the hide around the head. You want the head kind of outside of the hide the best you can, because if you ball the hide all the way around the head, the head will stay warm for a while, and then that can actually cause a little bit of slippage too. So you want to keep the head on the exterior of the hide if you're going to freeze it.
Yeah, I know all about that from experience. I did that on one of my very first bears. I kept the head on and the paws, and I folded it all together, and I rolled it together, and I froze it, and... Yeah, I soon found out that that's not a good idea.
Right. So, yeah, just, you know, dry, cool, clean. Get it to a taxidermist or a freezer as quickly as possible. If you can't skin out the head, freeze it on the exterior. You know, and they are a little bit different as far as skinning compared to a deer or an elk. But I always advise either bring, you know, several blades with you, like if you have a Havilon knife, if you're going to be using those, or at least a good sharpener. Take the time, because it seems like bear hair, bear hide, it just seems to kind of dull your knife a lot faster than it does a deer or an elk. So just take the time, you know, take some water, take a break, sharpen your knife. That way you don't hurt yourself too, you don't get exhausted, and just sharp knives, intentional cuts. Look online, you know, look online prior before you shoot a bear. So don't, especially if you're a first time bear hunter, don't go out, shoot a bear, and then wonder what to do. Read up online, read my book, that type of stuff. But learn how to skin for a rug or a half mount, or however you want to do it, prior to that, so you're not guessing and ruining the hide. And one other thing too is, like, a lot of times bear hunting is during warm times of the year. So if you're 10 miles back and you're 60 years old and you're not in the best of shape, you know, do you really want to shoot that bear? Can you get it out in time to save the meat and to save the hide? Or, you know, should you find something a little more easier for you to get out? I'm not saying people should take the easy road. I'm just saying that they should do what's best for the prey that you're trying to take. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So if you're a 20-year-old and you're 10 miles back and you're in shape, that's no big deal. You know, you can hike it out. But if it's 95 and you could lose the bear, you might not want to take that shot. So
yeah,
think about that.
Yeah, definitely. When you're in your 20s, it's no problem. Once you get over 40, then, yeah, it's a little different for sure.
Yeah, 45 is definitely a hill I'm climbing. So
But anyway, yeah, that's good advice, and yeah, that's another one. Do your due diligence before you head out, and read Doug's damn book before you get out there, The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting. I'm, like I said, I'm going to be looking up where to find that. But thanks, Doug, for spending some time with me today. I know you're a busy guy, and unfortunately, you didn't get a spring bear tag, but maybe next year, and good luck in the fall there.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
So, real quickly, where can Canadian folk up here follow you and just keep tabs on what you're doing and all that sort of stuff?
I'm on Instagram at Bows and Bears. That's the name. So Bows and Bears, all one word. I'm on Facebook. You can just look up Douglas Bows. You should be able to find me. And that's really about it as far as social media goes. I have those books. I've got, although you can't use electronic calls, I've got some apps out, like Ultimate Predator Calls is
Oh
an app
yeah,
I
good
use.
call. I downloaded your app, and yeah, I was messing around with it. That's great. That's I forgot about that. Sorry, man. I was gonna bring that up.
Oh, don't sweat it.
I have it
Yeah.
in my notes, and we kind of just got going through things. But yeah, that's you can download it at iTunes or Google Play. It's called The Ultimate Predator Call. Yeah, that's great. And I heard
Yeah, and
actually
I
a good tip. You were talking with another fella about just getting one of those, like a Ryobi wireless speaker, and using that as and then just using the Bluetooth and using it right directly from the app to that as a caller. That was a great idea. I mean,
no,
it save you hundreds of dollars because they're not cheap, those things.
yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of what it's designed for. So, if you go out and get an electronic caller, minimally you're looking at $100 or more, up to $800 or more if you want. But, the app is $5 basically that you can push from your phone to maybe even a speaker you already have that's Bluetooth enabled, and just bring it out there and set it up, and you have an e-caller for $5, the price of a cup of coffee.
Yeah, and the
So
nice thing about
it's a good
those,
beginner's way.
yeah, definitely. And it's the nice thing about those construction radios is they're meant for construction, so they're tough as hell. The batteries last a lot longer. I have an electric caller I use for coyote hunting, and that's one thing. The AA batteries, it takes 4 AA batteries, and I got to change those batteries once a day. Like, they just go dead all the time. And
Oh,
but
yeah.
with a construction radio, those we have them on our sites, and I mean the guys listen to those blared as loud as they go for, and those batteries last for days, and they're waterproof. Yeah, so that's a great tip, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. And yeah, no bait, just bears can be found on Amazon. I know that because much as I dislike Amazon, I had to buy your book off it. But I'll be looking, taking those tips and looking for The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting. Hopefully I can pick that up. Maybe I'll pick two up if I can and put one away as a collector's item.
Yeah, the ebook is available too. I mean, I'm the type of guy to where I like a physical copy of something.
Yeah.
I mean, even in video games, I don't like to download it onto a system. But yeah, the ebook is available. And if you're having issues trying to find it, just ping me on Instagram, or even if people have questions about bear hunting, whatever it might be, you just want to say hi, feel free to ping me on Instagram or Bows and Bears at Hotmail. I'm happy to help out any bear hunter with any questions anytime. So.
Okay, buddy. Thank you again. We'll stay in touch, eh?
Yes, sir.